Good evening, everybody. I'd like to call to order the City Council of Shore Acres Monday, October 13, 2014, at 7 o'clock meeting. Before we get going, if you have a cell phone, if you would please put it on vibrate, we'd greatly appreciate it. First line of business is call to order. Roll call.
Nancy Schnell, present.
Bill Moyer, here.
Bob Bunker, present.
Rick Moses, present.
Richard Adams, present.
Mike Wheeler, present.
2.0, pledge allegiance.
Move your caps.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
On the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state, under God, one indivisible.
Moving on to 3.0, special presentations. 3.1, Miramar Coastal Erosion Project Recommendation. Mr. J.L. Washington will be speaking tonight. This is a time for the council to ask questions, not the public. Once we get down to item 6.1, the public will be able to ask questions on this, just to let you know, so you will be able to. Mr. Washington, it's all yours, sir.
Thank you, Mayor. You appointed an advisory committee, council advisory group, to bring back to you a recommendation on Miramar shoreline preservation. I'd like to introduce Larry Wise, our contractor for this project from ERA, and he'll take it over from here, and we'll come back.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, guys. I appreciate the opportunity to come give a presentation to everyone this evening. First off, just going to say, if I think some of you probably came to the public sessions that we had. If so, you may recognize some of this. Some of this is repeat of those sessions. But we're trying to start from basically the beginning of the project, and I apologize if some of this is information you're already familiar with. Just to give you a short outline, we're going to talk a little bit about the erosion history, really what the drivers for the project are. The overview of the project and what our objectives that were set conjunction with the committee, and then talk about what the actual proposed project looks like. I just want to acknowledge the other partners who were part of this project. SWA Group did the landscape architecture portion of this, which included concepts about the plantings and also how the park fits in with the community and the vista structures or outlook structures. Freeze and Nichols has been and continues to be leading the environmental, so they're the guys that are coordinating with the Army Corps of Engineers on the permit. Robert Kistner for the Geotechnical and Surveying and Mapping Corps. I know that many of you probably lived in this community a long time and probably don't need anybody to tell you what the issues are around the shoreline, but subsidence and sea level rise are really probably the two biggest factors that have gone on. The Tri-County Subsidence District shows about 8 foot of subsidence between 1906 and 2008, I believe the number is. And then there's probably been about another foot of sea level rise on top of that. So that's a real big driver. The topography, Shore Acres, I'm sure most of you probably know, is sort of a low point between Red Bluff and Morgan's Point, both of which are high, and Shore Acres is sort of on the low point. That makes the shoreline along Miramar, particularly when you get close to the fishing pier where it's the lowest, really susceptible to waves and overtopping and more damage. And then the storm surge, of course, everybody recalls Ike. FEMA has recently raised their estimate of the 100-year storm surge. now up to 15.3 feet. Storm surge, of course, is always what's and hurricanes associated with it, what the most damage is caused by. So, overview of the project. The current work is funded by a grant through the Coastal Impact Assistance Program. The work is all being done off of that grant. To my knowledge, I don't think the city's put any money directly onto the project to date. The scope of work that we were scoped with was to develop a consensus-based plan for the shoreline, obtain the permits for the project that was developed and designed, and then lastly, to develop the final plans and specifications for the construction of the project. So where we're at present is we've come to you to bring forward the project and ask for the approval to submit the permit to the Corps. We're not going to complete the design until after we get into that permitting process and understand if they have any substantial changes that may affect the design. That way we don't have any rework issues. And then at that point we'll develop the final plans and specifications, and you'll have a package that's ready for construction. But of course the current grant does not include construction funds. So those funds are being sought by the city through various grant sources. It's anticipated that the funding for that construction would be primarily or completely funded through grants. The planning work includes the shore protection, also potentially some other environmental restoration, and planning for the park as a whole. And we're here tonight to present these plans to the City Council. And with your approval, that'll be submitted to the Corps. And then as part of the Corps' process, they have a 30-day public notice. So a actual mailed notice will be sent to every landowner who's adjacent to the project. The Corps does not actually send to the community as a whole, but the community can elect, you know, through whatever means you feel is most appropriate to send that public notice out to more people. And of course, anyone has, you know, 3 days to submit whatever comments they would like, and the court considers that. In terms of the project itself, we worked with the advisory committee. We had, I think, about 3 meetings with the committee, and I think the committee had several meetings themselves without us present, to discuss exactly what were the priorities and the objectives for the project. So number one was preserving Shell Beach and all the recreational uses for it. And along with that, very close number two, preserving the nearshore fishing and boating and all the other uses, preserving the views of the bay, and creating something that was durable and able to withstand at least Ike, which we've called a 100-year design storm. It's approximately probably what Hurricane Ike was. Preserve the access and the function for the fishing pier and the boat ramp. Since those are not truly public entities, the project cannot directly benefit the fishing pier, but we can certainly do what we can to make sure that it's compatible and has no adverse effects on the fishing pier and the boat ramp. Number six, consider some improvements to the park, particularly planting and vegetation. Wetlands creation and restoration, we had a lot of discussion early on, and it was pretty clear that that was generally not favored. However, as a bit of a less intrusive way of doing some environmental restoration work, we discussed putting in some oyster habitat creation along the toe of this structure. And that, on top of general environmental benefits, should also be much more attractive to the agencies who would potentially fund this because it has some environmental benefits to it. And number eight, we're very conscientious to make sure that it's how we tie into the properties both to the north and the south. Does not cause any issues for those. And lastly, but I think also very important, anything that this structure does to help mitigate damage to the properties or on the other side of Miramar or Miramar itself or the various utilities, is considered as a secondary benefit, but that was not the focus of the project, to try and reduce flood damage on those properties. So we went through a fairly lengthy alternatives analysis, and the preferred alternative was identified as rock riprap revetment from the entire length of the shore from Shell Beach all the way to the north end of the project. And as I mentioned before, potentially integrating into that some oyster restoration of the Toledo structure. As far as Shell Beach, the plan is to preserve that and to expand that by about 200 feet. And a driver for that is, as part of the landscape architect's vision on this, lining up, we've got some overlook structures, lining the south one up with meadow lawn, and that, or I'm sorry, shady lawn. I get the two lawns mixed up. Lining that up with shady lawn, and that that is kind of where the additional length of Shell Beach got set from. In terms of the park amenities, adding some vistas or super steps, as you'll see in a few minutes. And again, those are aligned with the two, with shady lawn and meadow lawn. Each of those would have a small shade structure. And then the last thing, a lot of discussion when we had the last public meeting about the tree planting, which was brought up by SWA, and it's a good idea, it's recommended, but it's really not a part of this project per se. It's more of a vision for how the park could be developed overall. So the architects did some very nice renderings, which this is the proposed shoreline as a whole, and then the next few will kind of zoom in on portions of it. So the south portion, the overlook structure is here, lined up again with shady lawn. So the currently the Shell Beach extends to approximately here. So we'd be adding this this length of sand, beach nourishment to Shell Beach. From this overlook structure onto the north is all a revetment. Then we have a sidewalk that here at the Baywood side has a bit of a loop structure, and then this basically follows right along the waterfront. at the north end, we've got the fishing pier, so we and the boat ramp. We start just north of the boat ramp. The revetment continues on. Here at Meadow Lawn, we have the second overlook structure. Then a similar kind of loop around the sidewalk on the north end there. The one thing on the alignment. We are pushing the shore out just slightly in this area to preserve a minimum of 10 feet between the edge of pavement and the sidewalk. So it won't be a wide park there, but there will be some, you know, with the grass there, and also keep the sidewalk away from the street, so help with safety concerns. So these are the actual permit drawings that are in front of you. These have the actual final alignments that were developed, etc. So again, the overlook structure here, this is where we preserved a minimum 10-foot offset between the sidewalk and the edge of pavement here. On the north end of the project, we have the existing seawall. This is outside the city bounds on private property, and the plan is we'll wrap the toe of the structure for about 15 feet around the front of the seawall to protect the toe of it and make sure we've got a good tie between the two structures. on the south end here, the fishing pier. One thing to note, we're looking to try and keep this as open as possible to different sources of rock and different contractors' construction methodologies. Typically, the cheapest way to build something like this in this area is to bring rock by barge, because you can put about 800 to 1,000 tons per barge. So that makes it very cost effective. But unfortunately, you typically need 6 to 8 feet of draft to bring those barges in. You can light load a barge. It cuts down the efficiency a little bit. But in order to allow that alternative, we have a temporary flotation channel, which would be dredged in, so the material would be side cast, and at the end of the project would be filled back in. Now, that is just an alternative. When this goes out to bid, we'll allow rock to come via upland source and truck haul, or come via barge. Or if the contractor can come up with some other creative way to get rock here, that's great. But we want to keep as many options open in the permitting. When we submit the permit, keep as many options open as you can. And then again, here's the far south end of the project. And you see from the south end of this, the east end of the step structure down to here would be additional beach nourishment to bring sand in. So these are some typical cross sections. This is one of the higher cross sections. The top elevation varies from almost 2 at the boat ramp up to a little bit more than 10 at both the north and south end. We have 5 foot thick rock riprap. This is limestone rock. And underlying that, a layer of smaller rock, and under that, a geotextile fabric. This dashed line here is the existing rock riprap, or concrete riprap, sorry. And so you can see we're, for the most part, when you look at all these sections, we're pretty well following the alignment and shape of the existing shoreline. It's going to be cleaned up and made look much nicer and smoothed out a good bit. And then the toe of the structure here is about minus 2.5 feet elevation, so it's going to be pretty much always submerged, except when we get these big blue northers. But this is the area proposed to be the oyster seeding area. In terms of that, Galveston Bay Foundation has a program, oyster gardening program, and with volunteer labor, it is essentially a free activity to go out and seed, garden the oysters. And I think maybe the city might have done, or some people in the city might have done that previously. This is just as an example. This is what a rock riprap, a good quality limestone rock riprap looks like. The beach nourishment section, we will cut out all the existing concrete riprap. I should mention we're going to remove that throughout the entire length of the project. All of that's going to come out. And then come back on top of that with sand. What we did was we took the cross sections, the survey sections from the beach, we had about 5 of them, and looked at them and developed what seemed to be kind of the average template of what's out there presently, so we'll match pretty well with the slopes and grades that are there now. And then in terms of the various park amenity pieces of this, we talked about the loops on the sidewalk and the sidewalk itself along the shoreline. Similar at the north end, along with the overlook structure there. And this is a sort of side view of what one of these overlook structures is going to look like. The bottom step here will be at about elevation 3. And the reason why we've done that is, this will not be right at the edge of the water. There'll be a little bit of rock in front of it. But the reason for that is we don't want this to be constantly wet and getting algae growing on it, becomes slippery and become more of a hazard. So it's up a little bit to keep it, you know, typically keep it dry. And then this is a small little shade structure. There was some discussion about putting benches here. In the end, it was decided that, you know, there's plenty of places to sit here without adding some benches to it. Just another view of the structure. And then these are the actual engineering cross-sections and plan view of the structures. You see each of these is a 16-inch rise and a 4-foot run, so you've got a nice little bench that somebody can sit on. The south one, the steps wrap around, and then the beach nourishment, the sand will come and basically cover these steps and pretty much follow this alignment right here, that slope. So then in terms of the cost estimate, the bottom line is our cost estimate is about just right at $10 million for the entirety of the project. And that's about 50,000 tons worth of riprap, about 50,000 tons of riprap to be removed. That's based on what we, the assumed depth we think we assumed it's about 4 feet thick. Then in terms of the sand to come back, that's about 2,000 yards worth of sand to come and add back into the project. That's what I've got, and happy to answer any questions.
Couple of questions.
First of all, I would like to just say you guys did a fantastic job. This is really, really nice. I appreciate it.
Yes, please. Approximately what fraction of the existing surface area of the Miramar area would be sacrificed for the riprap revetment?
Very little. We actually, for the most part, if I can go back a few slides here. When we laid this out, we took this point right here, the crown of the revetment, we matched that up with the crown of what's there presently. So the surveyor didn't tag necessarily what the furthest piece of riprap back towards the street from that was, but it's probably, you know, typically, I guess, 4 to 5 feet. You've got just some random scattered riprap, and this width here is 7 feet across the crown. So we're pretty much going to match the you know, what's there now. We're not going to be taking any significant amount of area away from the park. The area just north of the boat ramp, we actually are pushing that line out just a little bit to maintain that 10-foot width between the sidewalk and the street.
So how is it we end up with such a narrow strip north of the pier? As I recall, your discussion suggested that it might be as little as 10 feet wide.
That's fairly consistent with what's there presently.
It's gotten worse over the years.
That 10 feet is from the east. We've got a 7-foot sidewalk,
yeah.
And it's 10 feet from the edge of that sidewalk to the street, from the edge of pavement.
To the street.
Okay, so the revetment is in the bay, not in the existing surface area of the Miramar Park.
Right, we're pushing it out slightly in that area from approximately here, where there's a slight curve in the road, approximately there onto the boat ramp. We push it out. It varies, I'd say, probably averages 5 to 10 feet we're pushing out.
So it almost sounds like no net loss?
Yeah, yeah. It's.
I mean, that could be verified from a
Yeah, we could
surveyor's map.
Yeah, we could we can run that plan area.
Because I remember, I think I had this discussion at one of the public meetings, and there was sort of a to and fro about how far out into the bay the revetment would be versus how much would have to be sacrificed from the existing area.
Yeah.
And I heard you tonight suggest that that's changed from those past public meetings. Or is my hearing flawed?
I think what we said previously was that there is a bit of a balancing act, and that we wanted to push this out, but when you push out, then you're filling in the waters of the U.S., and it's an issue with the Corps of Engineers and particularly the General Land Office. So that was sort of the balancing act we're playing with, but we were able to push that out slightly and keep, you know, a pretty good balance, we felt like.
I'm not too troubled with that being an issue to take up with the Corps and the GLO for a number of reasons, because they arguably, under their authorities, are arguably receiving benefits from this project, too. And I think those need to be particularly pointed out to the Corps during the applications process and to any and for any of the discussions with GLO, just so that we don't get sandbagged, blindsided, or something else from those agencies who arguably may be receiving some benefits from keeping the revetment in the existing bay area. You know, I raised that issue at the meetings I was at because when I was looking at these architectural renderings, I was having a hard time doing the visual determination of how much of the existing surface area of the Miramar Park was going to be maintained and to what degree there was going to be some sacrifice there. That's not much there for the city to preserve, but any net loss would seem to be a shortcoming that would have to be recognized, dealing with all the other issues of this too, so that we don't get something on paper that might not be there.
I
would appreciate that.
The acreages, you know, as is now, and the change.
Yeah, that would certainly be very helpful, at least to me.
I without knowing the numbers, it's going to be a very, very small percentage.
I'm perfectly fine to see that information come back as part of this package.
Thank you, Arthur. Ms. Snell, any questions, ma'am?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Ross, for being here. Appreciate your time. Page 4, the last bullet on there states the public notice as part of the core permitting process, which is why we're here this evening. For the presentation, recommended that the group did an excellent job in giving us, and I know that they went through a whole bunch of filibustering and brainstorming, and here we are. I just want some clarification in the basically this evening is about proceeding with the permit process.
Correct.
Permit for a Cadillac, build a VW.
Yeah.
Don't permit for a VW and then try to build a Cadillac. And by if City Council does so and choose to authorize the continuation of this project with the permit, we're not going to the head, going to have to pull a trigger, and it's all about grant monies that may or may not be available, but always permit for the Cadillac, always.
Yeah, you can always build less than what you got your permit for, as long as it's still functional.
Right, and it has to achieve the proper goals that are set forth with any and all grant monies that we could be applicable for. Furthermore, on page 5, item number 7, the wetlands creation, restoration, not favored, but potentially integrate and oyster habitation. I may be wrong, but the oyster beds there on Shelby Beach, to my knowledge, there's never been any seeding done. They just tend to go, just by the way of the water flow around the north end, they just tend to replenish themselves. So, I don't have any other questions. I don't think we even need to delve into side casting, as this is about permitting and then seeing what we can get, because we can't go any further, correct, with applying for any grant money until we permit.
Not necessarily. You can still pursue the grant money while you're pursuing the permit, but it certainly helps when you're pursuing those grants to say we've got an application in at least, or preferably we already have a permit.
And here's our Cadillac plan. We'll settle for the Pontiac.
This is kind of, remember, 5 years ago when we had shovel-ready projects, this essentially gets the project shovel-ready.
Thank you, Mr. Lyon.
Could you give me a quick overview of this construction process with using the riprap and the way that it's set? Because I know when I came, all of our concrete and riprap that's there now was washed right up onto Miramar and mm-hmm. left nothing there. What is going to protect this from being washed up, much like what we have there now? And do you have any examples of how this construction technique is used in other places, as opposed to, say, the jetties in Galveston where they use the large granite?
Yeah. The first question, so the construction procedure, they'll come in first and remove that existing concrete riprap, grade the slope, and that's also going to include excavating down to the toe, because if I can get to a cross-section here, we do have a pretty deep toe on this structure, and that's one of the big differences between a properly engineered revetment structure versus what's out there now. If you don't have a good toe on the structure, it's kind of like the foundation on a house, and then it just gets undermined underneath it, and the whole slope comes down.
So the primary design of this is to keep the tide from getting underneath it and picking it up.
But it's just the weight of the rocks themselves is what holds them there. And that's the other big difference, is that these will be much larger rocks. And they're also, concrete is close to the density of limestone rock, but it's not quite there. And that actually makes a pretty big difference, because you're actually looking at the buoyant weight, like when you're in a swimming pool.
Right.
So that density plus the size of the rocks makes a big difference. We also have a underlayer, so this is a layer of smaller rock, bedding stone, that makes gives you a good structure. And then also important, this geotextile along the bottom, that helps keep the clay from getting washed out underneath that, the silt and the clay from getting washed out through the rock. And I think all three of those things are things that have been happening regularly with that concrete that's out there. And then, just that concrete, it's slabby. A lot of it's, fairly small pieces, but even the big pieces can get picked up and thrown pretty good, especially when they've got, big surface area compared to the mass, when they're real slabby.
Thank you.
I just think it'd be a stunning addition to the city, and one we'd all be proud of, so I hope it can be pulled off, because it would be gorgeous. What's the approximate timeline for the project?
The permitting, the permit will take at best 6 months. Typical is more like 12 months, and I don't think there's any guarantee how long it takes to get a permit. In terms of how long it takes to get grant funding, that's kind of another question. The construction, actual days in the field, is probably about 120 days. This whole thing can be built in, but you add to that the bidding time frame and all that, it is probably more like 6 months.
Thank you.
Just two questions, because Mike hit the one. Sort of put the cart before the horse, but on your experience when you're talking about traveling, basically moving the rock in, the limestone in via mm-hmm. truck or by barge, in your experience, which has it been, I don't want to use the word fruitful, but what I'm concerned with, one of the things I think about is one of our roads, hauling a tonnage on our highways mm-hmm. in the city, and also basically the fact you got trucks running up and down the roads, it's going to be a hazard. is it generally more of a large type system is what y'all generally do on this?
Yeah.
Much easier, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the work that's done is usually a lot of the Corps of Engineers disposal areas, placement areas, and other places where you typically have deep water fairly close. And if you can bring the rock by barge, it's almost always more economical.
Efficiently.
Yeah. And so I would say probably 85% to 90% of the work like this that is done in Texas is done via barge, and almost all of it, unfortunately, almost all of it's controlled by one company that has the quarry in Missouri and brings the rock down the Mississippi. So there's a bit of a monopoly
just a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Understood. All right, sir. Well, I think that concludes our questions. We greatly appreciate your time and your effort and your slides.
Okay. Thank you very
much.
I actually asked two questions and he didn't get answered the second one. About examples.
Examples. I'd asked if you had any examples of where this construction, this type of construction was used in other areas.
There's some small structures up in LaPorte for Sylvan Beach. There's jetties that they have going out there, the groins that they have. I'm trying to think what else is fairly close by here. All the placement areas out here on the other side of the ship channel from Shore Acres, all of those have been armored now with exactly like this, like Mid Bay Island. Used riprap just like this all over those. I do recall you asked about the Galveston jetties and the groins down in Galveston, the big granite block. Those are wonderful, but they're probably about three times the cost of the granite riprap.
Okay.
So I think everybody would love to do more structures like that, but cost-wise, they're just really prohibitive.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.